I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Go Glow podcast. Throughout my treatment for breast cancer, I've realised the importance of self-care. Whether it's a trip to the gym, a checkup with your GP, or even a five-minute pamper session, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. I'll speak to people who remind us to take better care of ourselves and people who will motivate us and inspire positive change. This podcast is made possible by Sally Hansen, the creator of which was an inspirational woman who promoted the message of self-care all the way back in the 1930s. Whether it's a quick tan application or a cuticle oil top-up, Sally Hansen wants us to have the power to feel like our best selves. This week on the Good Glow podcast, I talk to Cara Herriott. A lot of you might know Cara. She's the co-founder of Mum Talks, which she set up with her friend Lucy. But behind closed doors, while establishing the business, Cara's husband James was diagnosed with cancer. This isn't a sad story, though. It's one of overcoming and how, when supported by amazing family and friends, you can get through the dark times. I'm so grateful to Cara for opening up. This is the very first time she's told her story publicly, and I think you'll agree that that's an incredibly brave thing to do. I hope this episode inspires you to appreciate every moment this beautiful life gives us. Cara, thank you so much for joining me on The Good Glow. This has been a long time coming. I'm so delighted you're here. We've been in touch a lot over the last week and you have decided that now is the right time to tell your story. So thank you for trusting me with it.
Thanks, Georgie. I'm delighted to be here, if not slightly anxious, but it is the right time.
You have an amazing business, Mum Talks. I spoke at it when I was going through chemo. Yourself and Lucy are the dream team. And you're used to people coming in and telling their story. And now here you are telling your story. And probably a lot of people that go to Mum Talks don't know really what goes on in your private life.
Yeah, it's true. I suppose we expect a lot from our speakers when they come in and they're telling us everything. And myself and Lucy, I suppose we started it 2 years ago, and I guess we just wanted to grow it as a brand, I suppose, of not having emotion attached to it yet. And it's worked so far, but I guess now we're growing and yeah, it's important. I suppose the subject that I'll be talking about with you today is really important, and it's not a secret, and it's not something I'm ashamed of, or I get nervous. but it's really important, and I suppose it is part of Mum Talks, and it's part of what we've created, and it's about inspiring and empowering women, and I have to go with that, and this is part of why I'm here. So thank you for having me.
You've created an amazing business, and so many mums connect with each other, and it's just so important, I think, when you just have a baby. And you know, you can get the Lewis into town and go to one of these talks and meet other really supportive mums. And I found that when I was speaking, that everyone had a baby bouncing on their lap, but it was the smiles and the warmth in the room that really made me feel so comfortable. So you've created something so beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah, there's a good connection there. And I guess that's the whole thing, isn't it? We're all, there's so much similarity when we're parents, and there's such a lonely time of your life as well, because you've gone from having a job to having maybe your own career, and then suddenly you have a baby and you're not really the same person. So with Mum Talks, it's all about kind of connecting people away from digital, away from online, bringing people face to face. And yeah, even the babies are so well behaved. It's mad. I think mummy's happy, baby's happy. So
you created this brand around the time that James got sick.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that time. It was 2017, around February 2017.
Yeah, so myself and Lucy are best friends from primary school. So we grew up together. We moved to London while she was living there, and I decided to lie on her floor for summer after college. So we've been really close, but it's not one of those friends that we talk to each other every day. It was one of those friendships that I suppose we always have each other there, no matter what. So we lived together for summer. We lived together for 3 years over in London. I met James over there. Lucy had had her daughter Juliet before kind of all our friends had started having babies, and she moved to England for a while and just found it really isolating, and she was really lonely, and there was loads for baby and there was nothing for her. And then I had Thea, And we'd always kind of said we'd love to do something together. We didn't have a clue really what it was. And we just were talking, and 9,000 bottles of Prosecco, we'd sit there and they'd be like, this is the idea. This is it. And I remember vividly sitting in the Shelburne in December of 2016, and the two of us, like the Shelburne, I don't know who we thought we were, because we certainly couldn't afford to be sitting there, but we did anyway. And we just said, let's do this. Let's do this Mum Talks. Let's try from January. I took a redundancy. She decided to leave her job. At the time, she was going to do some consultancy, and we just said, let's do it. So in between saying, let's do it, I didn't have a job, she didn't really, and we sat in our kitchen in January, and we planned what we wanted to do at Mum Talks. We had speakers, a list of incredible women that we wanted to get in touch with, and I just remember just sitting there, and we did it. We have a video of our first morning, and like everything, it was the whole world ahead of us of this is going to be amazing. We're working for ourselves, our girls, we can collect them from school, you know, okay, we're not earning anything yet. And we were incredibly lucky, we had our husbands supporting us through this you know, venture. That yeah, we had booked a date, so we had the 9th of March booked in for our first Mum Talks, and the speakers, they all got involved. They didn't have a clue. We were literally two girls ringing these women saying, hey, we just have an idea, would you get involved with us? So we did. They said yes, we agreed the 9th of March, and then on the 14th of February 2017, James got a diagnosis of what we thought on that day was Hodgkin's lymphoma, which was it's like a cancer in your chest that is quite prevalent, I believe, and I'm not very scientific, in young males. So he'd had coughing and he wasn't really well for a few months, but like nothing that we would have gone, there's something array, mm-hmm. or, you know, it was very just strange that he was just getting these, what we thought was recurrent chest infections. So he went to his GP, and luckily he was an amazing guy. He just said, look, get an x-ray. This is just didn't seem right. So he did. And the GP, my stepdad, who I'm incredibly close to, it was his friend who was our GP, and he kindly rang him to just say, look, just to give you a heads up. Sorry, Dad. Okay.
It's always so hard to go back to the day.
Yeah. That things don't look good, and would he maybe have a chat with us and come over that evening? So so I knew there was something wrong, and my mum wouldn't ring me because I ring my mum about 1 million times a day and she didn't answer. And I was like, God, there's something not right with this. Like, mm-hmm. And there was no connection to really why I would have thought, but I was like, there's something strange. So I rang her and rang her and rang her, and she finally answered and said, oh, look, we're going to call over. So she's like, Jen just wants to have a word. So I was like, okay. Knowing instantly there was something wrong.
Is that your stepdad?
My stepdad, yeah. So I rang my neighbour and asked her, would she take Thea for a couple of hours? And she was like, yeah, random, like Valentine's night. I just said, would she, her boys are friends with Thea. So she took Thea in for a play, and they came over, and they, like, I feel so sorry that they had to bring that news to us. So we were in the kitchen, and it was just one of those, like, I'm not getting upset now about it, because when I think about it, for them as well, having to tell mm-hmm. us this really, really terrible situation. However, on the day they were telling us, really, it was, it's going to take maybe 2 years of your life of through intensive treatment, and you will see the other side. You will, you know, this is going to be hard, but you'll get through it. We're all in it together. And it was hard. It was hard. That was probably a hard day of acknowledging that we had a big road ahead of us.
Mm. Were you completely shocked?
Shocked. I think the two of us, I don't even think I cried. I think James went quiet. I think I just sat there. All I remember is my poor mum was saying, I have loads of food for the freezer. Well, I can't fit it in. And I was like, oh my God, I can't think of food. Am I ever going to eat again? But it was just a way of coping. Like, none of us knew what to do. And we were so grateful and thankful for our entire lives that he got to kind of break this to us, that this mm-hmm. was what we were looking at. So we had to come to terms with that pretty quickly. He was then sent to specialist, respiratory specialist, who got him in very quickly for a biopsy. And that was, it all happened really quickly. And I don't really know the timelines even between this, but I do know the next morning I had to get up and we were meeting one of our speakers that we'd confirmed for the 6th of March. And I just remember going, okay, like, I wasn't crying. I hadn't cried. I was just like, okay, let's get on with this. I think James went to work. It was really bizarre. We just got up and got on with the day. And I remember going in and we met her in town, and after I left, Lucy literally caught me. Like, I the only way to describe it is I fell to the ground. Like, every ounce of me just left my body. I couldn't keep myself physically standing, and we were on Drury Street, and she just held me in, and it was right, I know the spot. It was just outside Fade Street, and she held me against the kind of hold, not holding me, but holding me up. And I just was like, help, help. I can't, I help. And she's like, I've got you. We will get through this. She was amazing. So that was really tough. Like, that was tough, but weirdly, we got on with it. Like, we just were able to just, I don't know how people do it. I don't even know, when I look at myself, how that initial few weeks that we got, I think always in my head, I was like, oh, it's going to be fine. You know, this is another, maybe, you know, mountain we have to climb, but we're fine. Like, we're young, James is so healthy,
and you're given this to-do list,
yeah,
so you just
exactly
kind of go into survival,
yeah,
mode,
yeah. And you and as soon as then we, I suppose, we had the consultant date, you know, James' biopsy date, then you're kind of in the system, so you're like, God. And once we walk into Vincent's, it was like, oh, relief. It was like they took this weird pressure away from you, that you're like, okay, we're being minded now. So at this stage, we weren't sure what we were facing. We then saw that James had his biopsy. And I remember James came out and he's lying in the bed and he's really sallow skin. And he goes like this waxy yellow colour. And he was just lying there. And I was like, oh, he's all fine. And, you know, it'll be grand. And the consultant came in. And my first question, which is so bizarre, I was like, have you seen this before? I mean, like, I'd say he was like, who is your one? Like, what does she, what? I don't even know what I was asking. Was I asking, was it the Hodgkin's lymphoma? Was I asking, was it just, you know, I don't ever think I was expecting what we had then a few days later. So we James came home, everything. We kind of, again, we're just getting on with it on the timetable. And we had the meeting in, for very quickly, and we went in, and again, I don't think I ever thought what we were going to be facing, and he just said straight away, he said, look, you have lung cancer, you've stage 3, and James was incredibly strong, and he just kind of took it on board, and we were told, like, this is the process now, so you'll have an oncologist and she will be able to then give you your treatment plan. And he advised us on this incredible woman that we were lucky enough to, woman, the consultant that we were just really lucky to have. She was free to take James, and James was so amazingly strong in that room. He just took it, said, you know, he said, I'm sure you're sitting there thinking, why me? And what James said was, I am thinking, why not me? Like, and I'm sure you've felt the same, you know, it's bad luck, you know, it's bad luck. There's no rhyme or reason for James to have got this. There was no point in dwelling on why he's got it.
He wanted to put his energy into getting better
and to moving forward with it, even though this was really shocking news. So we went out of that room, and that was the second time that I collapsed, pretty much. And he then had to hold me, which is outrageous when I think about what he has been told. And I'm the one falling on the floor outside the door. So rang my mum and my stepdad and my family and just said, we can't go home. It doesn't seem right. We'll meet you in a hotel. We don't really know what we want to do, who we want to see, but we're going to go here for a coffee and some lunch, and we'll be in this room. And if you want to join us, obviously, then they will fly down to us and sit there. And it was a weird day, but we were all together and it wasn't in our house. And I don't even know why we didn't want people coming to the house. It was really strange. Like, I don't know, you'd feel like going out to a hotel as a celebratory thing, but for us it was just away from normality space. Or somewhere we don't go that isn't terribly, I don't know. We just didn't know. We didn't know. I don't know what you do in the circumstance. We just did what we
felt. Day that I found out that I had breast cancer, we went home to my house and like that everybody came over, but there was this, it's kind of a weird silence. It's very quiet because everyone is just trying to process what had happened. And obviously with you getting that lung cancer, like hearing that, where you just, I mean, you probably just didn't recognize your life.
No. And also, I suppose it was such a shock that, and I don't like saying he didn't smoke, he doesn't smoke. It wasn't something on our radar of, you know, we eat healthy. He was a gym bunny, like all these things. So that even more, I suppose, shocked us that this is bloody bad luck, that you've got something that's out of our control. There was nothing we can do about this situation. And then that night when I got home again, it was a hard, really tough night. But while all this was going on, Mum Talks we had agreed on this date. So that was maybe the end of February. So we were still going ahead. So, you know, I do not know how we...
Was it bringing you like a little ounce of happiness?
Not or at that time. Do you know what? I don't think anything in my life would have... I think I was numb. I think I was numb. And Lucy was incredible. And she was like, we'll just do one. Let's do one. And then the day that we had Mum Talks, we were meeting his oncologist for the first time that afternoon. And my mum says now, she said to me over the weekend, she's like, I could draw a picture of what you looked like on that day. Like, no one in the room would have known anything. I turned up, I showed up, we had an amazing morning. It was booked out, incredible speakers. And I left and we went to the hospital straight
from
there. And
what could your mum see that nobody else could?
I think I had no soul in me.
Yeah.
I think I was just a shell, probably, is the way to describe it. A show person, I suppose, because I put the makeup on and the hair on and as I have done probably a lot for 2 years, you know, I don't really show my vulnerability probably a lot because I can't, because I feel like I've too much going on that if I drop this little piece, then maybe I don't even know. I don't even know why I feel like that, because I don't know if there's no problem with being vulnerable. But I don't know if it's just a strength thing that just keeps me going and keeps me on the road. So that was our first, and then we had such a successful Mum Talks, and James from day one had said, you are doing this, you're not giving up, you're doing this for me, you're doing this, and that's the end of it. There was no question of me stopping, which is so selfless from him, because he had the responsibility of, you know, the financial, he was paying the mortgage, and he could have just gone, do you know what, I'm giving up work. He could have, and I would have totally understood that, and I would have gone back to work the next day, you know, and got a, I'd had a good job in advertising, and I could have gone back in if that was the case. And he just absolutely was like, you are doing, he was unbelievable. He supported, he's unbelievable when the support that I can't even describe what he's done, because he's given me 2 years to grow Mum Talks to what now is, I'm so incredibly proud of. And he has gone through hell, absolute hell.
Oh my God, that's amazing. And what did the oncologist, obviously they explained what treatment was ahead of James and...
Yeah, so he had a really intense treatment. And again, I can't even tell you exactly how many and chemos and radio he was in for a long time. I mean, probably 6 months of chemo and radio, and he was having radiation in his chest, which was horrific because it was burning his esophagus, so he couldn't really eat. And it was a really hard time watching him suffer. It's probably the hardest time of my life watching him suffer, with me not being able to do anything, and for him, for me, being able to, I suppose, keep the show on the road and a normal life, I guess, our new normal. You know, I'm talking like, you know, it was a really hard time, and it was, but we didn't sit around crying. We got up, like, James's unbelievable energy, even though he was at the depths, you know, he was out painting the garden and, you know, we always were doing stuff. We weren't sad. Mm-hmm. We couldn't be sad.
You weren't curled up in a ball on your couch.
No, we 100% weren't. And it was probably an unconscious decision that that's the way we were going to live with this. We have a little girl. We, you know, as much as possible, we had to keep our lives as normal for us. We're young, you know, sitting at home, it wasn't an option for us. It was, he worked through the entire thing. He's an amazing guy, like, as I said. He ended up in hospital one summer, which was really hard. And that was kind of a shock because I sometimes say I'm lucky. I was saying this to you earlier. Like, I'm so lucky, you know, but in a new lucky that he hasn't been really unwell. Like, he's been quite well through both treatments until the radiation towards the end. He just needed looking after in the hospital. And then he got pretty much a common cold, but they couldn't figure out what it was. So he ended up in hospital for about 7 weeks last summer. And unfortunately, if anyone, I don't know, listens or has anything that they could take from this is, I told Thea, well, we decided to tell Thea that he was on a work trip because we thought he'd be gone for a couple of days. And that didn't turn out to be a couple of days. And I had to explain to her then that her daddy was in hospital, and that's affected her. So to this day, if he's away for work, she wonders, is he in the hospital? So she'd have anxiety about that. So we may now, we'll never not tell her, like, not the full truth, but I suppose be a bit more open about it, because there was no reason for her to be scared of him being in there, because we talk about it now all the time about him being in hospital. But that was, yeah, I look back and I go, oh, I would just wish that I'd kind of been more open, or we had. I mean, you don't know. He could have been in there for a day or two, but it was just unfortunate that he was in there for quite.
And you were supported by ARC in the way that you told Thea, and you guys, I suppose, went to get help in how to do it the right way.
Yeah, I, the first time we went to ARC was for the both of us. We just were like, what? Who do we talk to, and what do we do? Just, I suppose, just having someone who's been through it, because we didn't know anyone that had been through it at the time. And they went in, they were amazing. And then Thea's behaviour had started after that summer, after when she was in, and we were on holidays. And, you know, she was four, like, she's a baby when this happened. So it's going to affect her. And she went to what we used to call, there is an official name, I think it's Climb for Claire charity for ARC, and they run these, we called a cancer camp, and she loved it. Like, star student, every day she'd come out and be telling us all about cancer. But it was amazing because it was really normal for her, and she was with all children whose parents were going through cancer. So that was a 6-week course she did, and then that helped us then talk to her about it in a child way, not in an adult way. Like, we would never give her details, she doesn't need to know details, but just to be more open in the house, because also the whispering, kids mm-hmm. really pick up on whispering. And I would imagine over those 2 years we whispered a lot. So yeah, we did that with her. And then for ourselves, then I went in and I did, I'll try anything once. So I did reflexology, acupuncture, and these are all free, like, they're an amazing service. And then counselling. James did a few, they have courses in there as well that you can do, and he tried a few of them. So they are there. They didn't work. What I needed at that time. But I think it's also interchangeable. You can, you know, maybe this month I might need something that I might need the month after. And I'm kind of learning that as well, that it doesn't work for everybody, or it's not maybe the right time for certain things. So I'd done loads of different counselling and therapy sessions.
He went through the chemo and the radio, and then were you waiting for, I suppose, another appointment at the end of that to see what was next at that point?
So we had all that, and very positive thinking, you know, he'd really gone through the mill, and we got amazing results, and we went out celebrating with my sister and her husband to this restaurant in Black Rock, you know, Heron and Grey, I think. Mm-hmm. And we were in there and we were lashing into we were just loving life, as we kind of always do anyway with all our friends and family. And Yeah, it was really strange. Can I tell you this really weird thing about this restaurant? So it was a restaurant that you couldn't book in for ages. It was really hard to get into. And I had booked it for the 16th of March. Just randomly that we'd got that thing. And I had to cancel it because we got James's diagnosis and we just weren't going for a meal. And he randomly rang me around the time of James's next appointment. It was like, look, we have this table free. I know you told me your husband wasn't well and maybe you can make it. So it's so weird that things happen. Like he'd rang and just offered the table. It was really bizarre. Anyway, we did go there, but it was kind of strange. Sorry, sidebar. So we had that. We celebrated. It was great. He got the all clear from his chest. But I do vividly remember his oncologist saying, you know, this is amazing, but next we have to watch. And she used her hand, and it's only after that I took it on board. So she pointed to her head. So at the time, though, it was kind of probably from my own self protection. I just was like, oh, yeah, whatever. Like, you know, close this door. We're going to move forward. You know, this is amazing news. And we got on. We had James went back to work, fully. I put everything into Mum Talks, you know, worked really hard. We had holidays. We did trips. We just actually got back to normal life, our new normal life. You know, he wasn't really affected in any way, you know, maybe a bit tired in the evenings, but and that was all great. And then I don't even know the timelines really because everything is so fuzzy. He was brought in for his regular, so he's on regular 3 month scans, so chest and head. And it was his first scan, his first after his post chemo and radio scan, it was his next one. And unfortunately, it came back that it had spread to his brain. Yeah.
So was that like 3 months after he had gotten the all clear around?
Yeah.
Roughly three
yeah,
months.
Yeah, 3 or 4 months, yeah. So again, that was like the wind taken out. I can't even tell you right now. I don't really remember being told about it. I don't remember anything about... I can't even... Now, right now, sitting here, I can't bring myself there. I don't know what... I don't know how we were told. I don't know. It's weird, isn't it? Whereas the first diagnosis, I can remember every single thing. And then... it's really bizarre.
But that has to be like even worse than the first time.
Oh yeah. Well, for us, me, I'm talking on my side of this, I suppose, is his brain. I mean, your brain, that's him, you know. That was the most terrifying diagnosis for us. Well, and also you're terrified. You don't know how that's going to affect you at all. And it's also new, I guess, because I wasn't a massive Googler on any of this. So because I noticed if I'd gone in there, I'd be so knee deep that I wouldn't be able to, you know, the reality versus expectation. I just didn't know what was real. So I really tried not to Google anything. And James probably would be the same. Like we just kind of focused on what the doctors were telling us. But the brain diagnosis was terrifying. And he was under an amazing radiologist who had done his radiotherapy, and we were with him then in the Beacon, and they were amazing in there. So he was told he would be having radio. Now again, excuse my medical language because I'm not very good at it. He'd be having radiostactic, which is like radiation directly into your brain, which was shocking. And then, of course, as things go, the date was put in. And it was our first Mum Talks live podcasting event with the mother of Pod that night that we were hosting it in house. We had a full house of, I think, 100 mums coming. It was our first big evening event. And I was like to James, well, like, I mean, I can't do this. You know, we'd been told, you know, after the treatment, he'll be tired or, you know, he might be able to walk properly because of the swelling on the brain and all these things. He was like, there's no way you're canceling this. You're going. I don't care. And that was a bit of a struggle, I think, for me to be, because James is a very private person. So it wasn't like I could get my mum in to mind him because he would be like, absolutely not. And also, we were thinking, oh, he needs minding. That was never part of this cancer situation for us. You know, it was just me and him in it, I suppose, and kind of just getting on with it. And yeah, he was insistent that it was going ahead. And I remember being in a hairdresser while he was in getting it. I know this is, sounds like so awful, getting my hair blow dry. I couldn't even probably wash myself anyway because I felt so dreadful about the whole situation. And it was in, it was near the Beacon. And this hairdresser, like, I didn't say anything. I just sat there. I was getting a straight blow dry, nothing fancy. And she said, I haven't seen you here. And I said, oh, my husband's in the hospital and I'm just getting a blow dry. And she said, I just have this angel card I want to give you randomly. And I don't really believe in, not that I don't believe, I just wouldn't be into it. And she gave me some incense sticks and an angel card in front of me. And she said, I think you need this. And then I was like, obviously bawling. And she was like looking at me going, are you, what's wrong? I was like, oh, my husband's getting brain surgery and I'm getting a blow dry. Oh, this is just crazy. I can't even process it. And she was like, oh, okay, well, you need more than incense, I think. Anyway.
So, and what did that mean for you, for, like, a stranger to kind of reach out to you like that?
Yeah, like, I don't, you know when you're vulnerable and someone says, or you're a bit sad, but can I give you a hug? And you're like, do not touch me, because if I'm gone, I don't know if I'll ever stop. So it was like, it was actually quite cathartic, I think, because I didn't feel worse when I left. So it mustn't have done, you know, I think I was, she was really nice. So I collected James, and the my deal to him was, if I go ahead with Mum Talks that night, that he had to get his sister over. It was really bad timing. His poor mum had to have spinal surgery at the same time, so she couldn't even travel for like 12 weeks when he was diagnosed, which was really awful for both of them. But so his sister, who was amazing, and which she lives in the UK, fly over at a drop of a hat. So she came over and was with him then for like, just stayed over, really, while I did Mum Talks. Yeah, got through it. Brilliant night. I mean, it's so bizarre that I can have two, like, on the same day that such extremes are happening, that I can focus on either, on both, which I could in different pockets. I wouldn't have brought the emotion in that evening. It was like game face on. Myself and Lucy used to have a thing when, you know, things were tough. You're not allowed to hug each other and you're not allowed to look each other in the eye. And then also on my, when my friends would be amazing and they come and support Mum Talks. Some who weren't even mums, they would just come along, and the rule was, you may come, but you may not look at me, you may not talk to me, you may not hug me, you may just, you know, enjoy the morning, thank you for your support, and regards, you may go.
Yeah. It was around that time that I was getting treatment for the breast cancer, and I was in bed one morning, I'll never forget it, and I seen your Instagram post about the brain cancer. I was floored, devastated. I found it really tough to kind of go out to Jamie and say, oh my God, like, this has happened. And but you said in that Instagram post, which I thought was so powerful, you were like, knock on our door on a Monday, and if we don't answer, bang down the door on Tuesday. Just keep coming. We will eventually answer. I want to talk a little bit about your family and the support and your friends, and because family is everything during those times, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Beyond, like, I think I said earlier, myself and James kind of, I think, went into a little bit of a cocoon for ourselves, and I'm really close. I've got four sisters. I've got a huge family. I've incredible step siblings that are like my siblings, and my dad and my stepmom, and they all rallied around. They were all there, you know, all the time, while also, I suppose, giving us that period of getting used to it. It's kind of a bizarre one. I think, I looking back, I don't know if I pushed people away, because I don't think I did, but I definitely was on this self-preservation of head down. And my poor mum, like, she'd, you know, I would talk to her every day, all the time, and she would probably get it a bit more from me, you know. She'd be trying her best, saying things, and I sometimes just couldn't process what she was saying, and it would be all really positive, but sometimes I would have been like, oh, I just need this I need to be able to say this is a possibility. And it's, you know, that it's lifting you up, which it was always, all they did was lift me all the time. and James all the time lifted us.
Like telling you everything was going to be fine.
Yeah, and I suppose just there, like they were always there, not physically, but you know, I never felt I didn't have them around me at every second of this. And when I reflect on everything that I've been through, is that this just doesn't affect me or James. You know, this has affected our immediate family, our immediate friends, and the heartache. And for them, they are outsiders, you know. And I remember, and I'm sure they all kind of feel like sometimes that that's where they were, because there's nothing anyone can really do except just be there, you know. Not, it's a funny one, and I don't know if it's just our experience of it that we didn't take probably more help, or my best friends from college, the gals, the birdies, there you go, girls, name check. They are my bestest friends in the world, and I definitely pulled away. I just could not cope with the love. It's so bizarre. I couldn't cope with the hurt that they were going through. They were really close to James. So they set up their own private WhatsApp group without me as check-in. And it was just check-in. So my neighbour, Jess, she lives two doors up the road. We were really, really close to her. And she was, I suppose, the guardian of, am I actually okay? You know, and it was about me, which is really nice that they were all so worried about me. And, you know, I think at one stage they were like, right, you know, what can we do? Like, get her a cleaner. We were lucky we had a cleaner that was able to help us out when I wasn't around. Or food, always bring food to people, I think. Food. They would, like, one of the girls would drop up croissants in the paper on a Saturday morning. Like, we had so many incredible, they were always there. So that's what I'm saying. They're always there. Did I let them in? Probably not. And again, when I reflect, it's definitely self-preservation that I was not claiming I was stronger than I was. It was just, I have to get through this. Mm-hmm. I have to keep my head down. I had mum talks, which was taking up a large proportion of my mind, I suppose, and my brain power. James, and then obviously Thea.
And as well, you don't want to keep telling the story over and over again. Like, sometimes you just, like, I just wanted to go home and just watch TV and kind of just feel like things were normal for a while. Yeah. When I got sick, obviously, because I'm a girl, my house was filled with flowers. Like, it was like a jungle in my house. Yeah. And it was so nice. Like, still to this day, as a habit, I look on my doorstep when I drive up my driveway, because there was always a bunch of flowers on my door. But with you, with James, obviously people weren't sending him flowers, so people were sending food. So, like, that's such practical help, isn't it, to send food? Because at the end of the day, like, you can't be coming home and, like, you can't even think straight, let alone try to come up with dinner. Yeah. I think for people listening, I always get messages saying, you know, my friend is going through a tough time. What can I do? And I'm like, drop up lasagna or something.
Yeah, definitely. And there's an incredible lady who spoke for Mum Talks who set up a company called Kayla's Kitchen. And it's all healthy dinners that a friend of mine who lived in New York sent over. And I hadn't really thought, I remember this big bag delivered of any meal that you can imagine, just you put it straight in the freezer, it was all home cooked. And I then read into where this had come from, because it was all home cooked. There was no additives, no, Thea could eat it. It was brilliant. And she set up because her daughter had been in hospital for years, and she just felt that the processed food or the ready meals weren't cutting it, you know. And it's not, and it's so important to keep well fed. And I'm not saying eat super healthy all the time, because sometimes that doesn't help. It's not easy to do, I'm sure, with you and Jamie, like, going in and out of the hospital all the time. Like, I don't even know if I ate dinners a lot. I might have had a I don't even know really what I ate.
Especially during chemo, like, I felt like it was like a pregnancy. So I needed, like, loads of carbs for energy. And I ate, you know, my spinach twice a day just to try to keep my bloods healthy. But I was also eating, like, you know, bread and pizza and things like that, because, like, sometimes just a pizza is the greatest thing to happen a week.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And easy. So it was all about easy, practical food, but they were all amazing. And then I also reconnected with an old school friend who has been my lifeline. And she has been, I suppose, when I was going back to earlier about, you know, I tried counselling and therapy, and she has been all of that encompassed. to me, and we call each other the cancer co-pilots. Her husband unfortunately got diagnosed pretty much the same time as James, and I Instagrammed her one day. I saw it and I just said, look, oh my God, I can't believe this has happened to you too. And we met for a coffee and we just talked and talked, and she is really like my other husband, like not obviously, but she is, I'm so close to her. Everything we go through, we can talk about everything with no judgment, and make it like it's real. You know, sometimes you say these things and people who haven't been through this, you could say something that they'd be a bit like, oh, that doesn't sound nice or kind, or because you're frustrated. You know, there's times of major frustration on all parts of this. And she is there every single second if I need her, and vice versa for her to what I am with her. You know, this, we're just in a non, and not that any of my friends are judgmental. She just gets it. She gets it. She gets the really low, hard days, the financial, you know, you don't know what's around the corner.
I think like different friends play different roles.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she's like your guardian angel in terms of
100%. Yeah. And we, religiously every Friday we meet, and it, without fail, really, in the last 2 years, there's limited time. Even on when we were both on holidays at the same time, we'd FaceTime each other. It's just like a check in, really, to make sure we're doing okay, or bounce ideas off each other. And she's incredibly creative, and she has also then guided me with Mum Talks and stuff. You know, she'd be able to say, this is what I think. And sometimes when I wouldn't have the brain power and Lucy is doing other stuff, and I'd be able to then kind of feel like I'm giving something. I don't know. It's just been, that's been my counselling and my, I've been really lucky to have her.
And how is James now?
He is amazing. So he's on a targeted treatment drug. That I don't know much about how long it's on the market. I don't really know much about, again, the medical side, but he's had three scans on his brain post starting these drugs, and he's been all clear. So long may it last. And he is working away. We went and did our, you know, we have our, we don't call it a bucket list because it's not a bucket list, it's what we want to do as a family list. And we went to Australia for a month to one of my best friends from school, and stayed with her and travelled. And we're trying to just do as much trips as we can. Our weekends now are really important, that we do at least one thing as a family, that memory makers, I suppose, for, you know, while he's well and while I'm well, because who knows? Like, you just don't know what's around the corner. And I suppose now we appreciate that. He's amazing. He's a really amazing guy.
You could say that's what the cancer has given you, is these mindful moments as a family that maybe you just wouldn't have appreciated as much before.
Definitely. Yeah, I know. And it's mad to think that it's taken something as extreme for us to kind of, not that we didn't before, we definitely did, but I suppose now it's got a bit more meaning behind it. We had a lot of years of, you know, really tough times, and now it's kind of a time to enjoy ourselves and do things. I don't know. We definitely are. I'd say we definitely have a different outlook.
Because the cancer, it changes your life so much and it brings so much sadness, but then it just gives you so much. It's such a weird thing. I wouldn't feel comfortable saying this to you unless I had had cancer myself.
I know, I understand.
But it's just so weird, and I'm still trying to get my head around that every day. It's brought so much positive change in my life that I look back and I don't know if I change it, because with Pia, I'm just so happy that I can be this, the best version of myself for her, and we can go out and do a hike every Sunday morning, and that's normal for her.
Yeah.
So that when she grows up, that will be a part of her life.
Yeah.
Or being very mindful of her health and checking herself, and hopefully these will just be things that are normal. And if I hadn't have gotten sick, then maybe, you know, she wouldn't have done those things.
Yeah.
So we left Thea to last.
Yeah.
Because I don't think either of us
are able for this conversation.
No. But I'm so happy for you guys that everything is well now. I follow you on Instagram. Your Instagram page is amazing. And you guys, you're like the three amigos.
Yeah, we are. I have to say, now, obviously, Instagram versus reality. Yeah, we are a really tight little family. And to get Thea, we can do another podcast on this and eventually, but it was a hard road for us to even have a baby. So she is, ironically, her name is Theodora, which means gift from the god. And at the time, I didn't know that. I just loved the name. So, and she is, I mean, she is strong-willed, feisty, will give anyone a run for their money. And if she's not running the country, I've done something wrong. That's a fact. But she is, and hand on heart for both of us. And I know I'm not talking on behalf of James in this, but when we go and think about Thea and the consequence of cancer is really the hardest part. And for, I know for both of us, it's, yeah, we don't really talk about it because it's really too dark, I guess. Everything is dad. Even the other day she said, if dad goes away, who's going to answer my questions? And I was like, me? She's like, no, you're not. I was like, oh, okay, cheers. They are obsessed with each other. And it's the most amazing because it's such an important relationship for a girl and her dad to have. And, you know, last night I go, so our social life really doesn't exist anymore because, well, I'm tired and James is tired from the treatment in the evenings. And like, I was watching Love Island final last night and the two of them just go up to bed and they're, you know, they lie in, they both fall asleep beside each other and I move her. And it's pretty common in our house that that's normal. And I just love it. I think it's really special. I think it's incredibly special. And yeah, she definitely is affected by this. She's got a bit of anxiety about James because we've told her that, you know, he's a little bit of cancer, that it hasn't fully gone away, because I'd never want to put her in a position that she thinks that we lied, or, you know, if it comes back that it comes out of the blue for her. So she knows he's in the hospital every few weeks. She knows he's on tablets. She knows where the tablets are in the house. And yeah, we're really conscious of not giving her overload of information, but I suppose keeping her in the loop because she does get anxiety from it, and she can get upset about it, which is really awful to have to be with her when she asks questions.
But what has it meant for you guys to have her during this process? Like, obviously kids, they bring so much light to your lives.
Yeah, well, I guess, as when I was saying earlier, like, we try and live a normal life as much as possible, and having a kid, there's no more normal than the 6 o'clock wake up call of, I want my porridge and I want it hot and I want it now. You know, you have to get on with it. You have to get up. And James would have powered through in the mornings. Like, they do breakfast routine always. They have their breakfast together. Yeah, it definitely has probably helped us both to have that normal functioning day, because I suppose you have to get up and you have to get dressed and you have to put your face on and you have to be like happy for her and for ourselves, because I think it's so important that we live as happy lives as we can. And we always say that to her, you know, when she gets sad, we're like, but we have a happy life. You know, we want you to have a happy life. We want you to be happy, because she is our life. She actually is our life.
Oh, amazing. Thank you so much for coming in, Cara. Mum Talks is such a success, and it's just so beautiful to hear you speak about how James supported you, and it takes a village. So yeah, for him encouraging you, look what it's become. You must be just so proud.
So proud. I'm so proud of him. I'm so proud of myself and Lucy. She also should take tons of credit, because there's no way we would have done it without each other. And as you say, it does take a village. All my friends, all my mum encouraging me, like, there's, yeah, it's been, everybody has got me to where we are now. And yeah, we're just gonna keep getting bigger and bigger, I hope.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Georgie.
Thanks for listening to the Good Glow podcast, made possible by Sally Hansen. To discover more, you can shop the products in Macaulay Health and Beauty Pharmacies and other stores across the country now. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please subscribe so you can be the first to hear about new ones. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please leave a review. To all my listeners in Ireland and those of you around the world, thank you for the amazing support and continued feedback. You can
can find out more about my story on thegoodglow.ie and follow me on Instagram at georgie.crawford.